This is DMOU, Destination Marketing Organization University, the DMO Sectors Podcast, and I'm your host, Bill Geist. DMOU is where you hear the best and the brightest in the destination marketing space, sharing innovative and compelling stories to inspire you to take your destination and organization to the next level. The format for our conversations on DMOU is elegantly simple. It's three questions and a bonus round. And today's episode is sponsored by our friends at Destinations International, where registration for the annual convention in July in Tampa is now open. Last year's event was a sellout, so don't dawdle. You can learn more at destinationsinternational.org, and we look forward to seeing you in Tampa in July. And now it's on to our show. Denny Edwards is the president and CEO for the Greater Raleigh Convention and Visitors Bureau, whose role it is to sell and market Greater Raleigh as a tourist and meetings destination. Leading a staff of 34 and managing an annual budget of $11.2 million, he has served in this capacity since April of 2007. Prior to joining the GRCVB, Denny served as Senior Vice President for the Greater Fort Lauderdale Convention and Visitors Bureau for 10 years. A 40-year DMO veteran, Denny was also Director of Sales for the Greater Houston CVB, and prior to that, served as Director of Sales for the Palm Springs Desert Resort CVB. He currently serves on the Board of Directors for the U.S. Travel Association, North Carolina Travel and Tourism Coalition, and several local and regional boards. Denny recently served on the Board of Directors for ASAE, PCMA, and Destinations International. He received the Business Leader 2009 Triangle Mover and Shaker Award, the Event Services Professional Association Executive of the Year in 2022, and was named to the 2021 and 2022 Business North Carolina list as one of the most influential leaders in North Carolina. An Iowa native, Denny is a graduate from the University of Northern Iowa, where he received a Bachelor of Arts with a major in public relations and minors in business and marketing. Denny Edwards, welcome to DMOU, my friend.
Great to be here, Bill.
So self-deprecating is a term that, honestly, you seriously own. When I asked you to come on DMOU, you said, and I quote, "I am sure you have more interesting topics and folks to chat with." No, we don't. I mean, let me check off just a few of the accomplishments that you and your team have achieved in the past 2 years. $387 million to relocate the existing downtown amphitheater and build a new convention center expansion. $75 million to build a new convention hotel adjacent to the convention center. $75 million to partner with the town of Cary to build a new indoor sports complex. $300 million in tourism tax funds to enhance the PNC Arena. You created a $200,000 signature event fund to attract events that will have significant overnight visitation. You worked with the local airport to increase international service and now have added service to Iceland, Mexico City, Panama City, and Frankfurt. And you worked with the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association to receive $5 million from the state to create a workforce development campaign. Yeah, that's serious. So there are a million ways we could go with your three questions, but I want to break it up into conventions, sports, and events. So first question, in a time where dollars for public infrastructure are so tight, how the hell were you able to secure over $400 million for convention center expansion, amphitheater relocation and upgrade, and another $75 million for a new convention hotel?
Well, Bill, I will say it. I mean, we got a lot of this approved over the last 2 years, but this has been a work in progress really nearly since the day I got here. But back in 2018, we launched a 10-year destination strategic plan for the county, the first time we've ever had a strategic plan. And part of the reason for that is our county commission and Raleigh City Council decide how to spend the majority of the tourism tax collection. So we have a 1% prepared food and beverage tax and a 6% hotel tax. We receive about 25% of the hotel tax. The rest of it is set aside for tourism infrastructure. So as you can imagine, prior to having a strategic plan, the elected officials were getting lobbied literally almost every day on ideas from from our community on where to spend the money, how to spend the money. They didn't have a roadmap, didn't really have a blueprint in terms of how do we, you know, what projects do we spend it on? This strategic plan not only gave us some great roadmaps in terms of how to develop our annual business plan, but it gave the elected officials a roadmap and a blueprint in terms of where the priorities needed to be, and basically gave them cover to say no to a lot of the projects that really didn't have much influence on tourism.
And that's brilliant, isn't it? To provide them the cover, because that's the hardest part of their job, is saying no to people.
Right. And, you know, so they, when we started talking about the strategic plan, we had complete buy-in. We represent 12 different municipalities here in Wake County. So we had to get buy-in from all the elected officials, all the town or city managers, as well as the county, to ensure that once we do this plan, they're going to really follow the plan. And thankfully, we got complete buy-in because they had a lot of input in terms of what the ultimate plan looked like. And our goal was to take an increase overnight visitation from 16 million in 2018 to 21 million in 2028. So out of that plan, you know, to summarize it, there were four top priorities that came out of that plan in terms of tourism infrastructure. One was the need for another convention hotel within walking distance to the convention center, a convention center expansion, enhancements to an arena that was going to be 20 years old, and a need for an indoor sports complex. So we got buy-in from all of our elected officials. We knew that all four of those projects would have to be funded entirely from tourism tax dollars, or at least partially by tourism tax dollars. So we worked very hard to make sure we had community buy-in as well. So every opportunity we had, whether it was a Rotary or talking to local chamber committees or whatever, we talked about the plan and how important the plan was and that we needed to follow it. In part of that conversation, which most bureaus do, is, you know, we talk about the amount of lost business we've had just in 1 year's time, that we've lost 64 groups, over 100,000 room nights just in 1 year due to the lack of hotel inventory.
Yep.
And or a convention center expansion. Another thing that we took advantage of is our Chamber of Commerce conducts an inner city visit every year where they go to a comparable city. Salt Lake City, Denver, Indianapolis. Uh-huh. And we worked very closely with the chamber because all of our elected officials attend that program. We made sure that part of the agenda included what they do for tourism, how is their hotel package and convention center package, and then how does that compare to Raleigh? And in every case, we were always at the bottom.
Yeah,
and that kind of helped build our case because, you know, particularly with the elected officials, they need to see what our competition is. And that was a great way to show them our competitive set. So we continued to get good buy-in. So what we had to do then is determine what the cost was, knowing that we had a finite amount of money that we could spend. We wanted to make sure that we got all four of these projects done. So when we built the original convention center, we right across the street had a block that we always intended to do an expansion on. However, over the last 10 years, we put a temporary amphitheater on that site. It was managed by Live Nation. They were doing about 35 concerts a year, and it became very, very successful. So we knew in order to do an expansion, we could not lose that amphitheater. Because the community loved it, and we knew that we would get pushback.
Right.
So we had an opportunity to buy a piece of property directly across the street from the amphitheater that we would build a brand new one. So that was part of the plan. We then hired a design firm to start telling us, we knew what we needed for a convention center expansion, but we needed some cost. So we hired a design firm to work on costs for a convention center expansion as well as a new amphitheater.
Yeah.
So that was one bucket that was in the works, and then ultimately come back with a cost for to do both of those projects. At the same time, we hired a hotel consultant to work on our behalf to send out an RFP for developers that might be interested on building a convention hotel. We knew that in most cases, to get a convention hotel with a minimum of 500 rooms built, there was going to be some kind of an incentive that we would have to bring to the table. So we worked and received a number of proposals as a result of that RFP, narrowed that down, and ultimately selected the Omni Hotel to build a 550-room hotel with about 50,000 square feet of meeting space.
Cool.
So we got the cost of that, worked that deal out. So those were two buckets, really three if you count the amphitheater, that we worked on making sure that we knew what the costs were. And also from a timing standpoint, to get hotel support, it was critical. As you know, some hotels are a little skeptical on using tourism tax dollars to build a hotel.
Yeah.
They worked with us very, very closely to ensure that when we struck the deal with the Omni, that we had to have a booking agreement. That included booking agreement for the number of rooms that they had to commit, as well as a rate agreement to make sure that, they were still going to be competitive in our market and that we had a complete hotel package. So part of our deal with Omni, in order to get our hotel support as well, was to strike that agreement with them for both a booking agreement that included both rate and the number of rooms that they would commit.
And that is so smart, man, because I see so many of these projects that component is not part of the deal with the hotel.
Yep.
And it just doesn't work. You're so close to the finish line and you're so willing to give up almost anything to get it done. But if you don't get those agreements in place in the beginning, it oftentimes doesn't go well.
Yeah, and we've seen horror stories throughout the country, right, where they might have a great hotel, but the hotel package, they're not committing enough rooms or they're pricing themselves out of the market. And we just couldn't afford to do that. And fortunately, we got a great partner with Omni and feel very good with where we're going with all three of those projects.
So before we leave the convention question, I got to ask, you said earlier on about, you know, finite amount of money. It's all going to be, or most of it is going to be, hospitality and hotel tax revenues that are applied here. Is there enough money to do that and keep you whole as the destination marketing organization for the region?
Yeah, and you know, well, yes. that was part of the, you know, fortunately here in North Carolina, there is state legislation that they have to give us 25% of the hotel tax. So we were protected. I guess where it got really dicey, though, and this is where we had to continue to pound the drum, it would have been very easy. Ultimately, it's the county and the city staff and elected officials that determine the distribution of those funds. It would have been very easy for them to say, well, you know what, we can't do all four. We're just going to do two of these. Maybe it's the arena and the hotel. We're going to have to wait on the expansion and the indoor sports complex. Mm-hmm. And we said, no, this is our moment where we have to do them all simultaneously.
Right.
So there were numerous meetings with city staff and county, as well as their budget offices. We had a number of meetings to go through various models to make sure that whatever that bare minimum was that we ultimately agreed to was enough to do all these projects in a quality way, that we weren't losing quality, but we were still getting everything we needed. So that, yeah, there was a lot of discussion about that, but really no concern about our budget per se.
Okay. And there was enough money on the table. I mean, this isn't your moment in time that you've been building towards for over a decade, but then with recovery money on the table, you could make it all work. Is there some of that?
We are not using any recovery money for these projects.
Okay.
It's all...
That's even cooler.
Yeah.
So wow.
It's all... I mean, they were willing to do debt on all these, but using the model to, you know, make sure that the debt was covered.
Okay. So let's move on. Not only did you help secure $300 million to upgrade the PNC Center and secure a 20-year deal to retain the Hurricanes, which have just committed to developing an $800 million entertainment district, which is unbelievable, You've also secured $75 million to build that indoor sports complex in neighboring Cary. So tell us about how you engaged all your community partners to do those projects.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the arena was a challenge. It was even more challenging than the other projects I just talked about because our lease with the Carolina Hurricanes was coming up. Our owner made it very clear he needed upgrades to the arena. The commissioner from the NHL told us the same. So we worked very closely with the owner and the NHL to make sure that we understood what needed to be done in order to reach their level of quality to be a home for the Carolina Hurricanes. But the ironic thing is the arena is managed by an authority. It's called the Centennial Authority. However, the land, part of it is with NC State, part of it is with the state. So in order to get this deal done, we had to get the county, the city, NC State, the state of North Carolina, the Centennial Authority, and the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes all to agree on what this project looked like. And it literally took over 2 years to get everybody to agree in concept. Yes, we're good with it.
Wow.
Part of this $800 million development that the owner is going to be doing sets on land that not only surrounds the arena, but also surrounds Carter-Finley Stadium, which is where NC State plays football games. So they were going to lose a lot of tailgating spots if he does this development. Which at NC State, that's a big deal. Tailgating's huge here. So there was a lot of discussion. So he ultimately agreed that whatever spaces they lose, he'll build decks. And that was enough to get NC State on board. Ultimately, on the arena deal, they too hired an architect and design company to come up with concepts and had to really tell the city and the county what would be that bare minimum from a financial standpoint that they needed to get this enhancement done. So we finally came to an agreement at that $300 million range. And part of the deal that the owner wanted then too to make himself whole was the ability to do the mixed use development around the arena.
Okay.
And
so the two were related.
Yep. And at the same time, the General Assembly passed a sports wagering bill, which gave him the ability to build a sports book on that site as well, which is, again, is a revenue model for him.
Sure.
So I will say that he was very, very smart because the Raleigh City Council was kind of on the fence on this project. And he came on board and said, look, affordable housing is very important to this community. He agreed to do 200 affordable housing units as part of this mixed-use project as well.
Wow.
So yeah. Any city council member that might have been on the fence, that was enough to get to approve it. So we got that deal done. It took about 2 years, but we finally are moving forward with an agreement with the owner. He, at the same time, once we got that agreement done on the $300 million, he signed a 20-year lease extension. So he's very, very committed to this market, not only with the Hurricanes, but now with his $800 million mixed-use development. So very exciting project for us in that area. We couldn't be more happier.
Yeah.
On the indoor sports complex, we had about $75 million left for this indoor sports complex, which we knew wasn't going to be enough. But we put it on RFP to find out if there was anybody that might be willing to partner with us on a project. And the town of Cary fortunately stepped up to the plate. They have some amazing youth, amateur, and collegiate sporting venues already. USA Baseball is headquartered there. They have an aquatic center, great soccer complex. They host all the ACC tournaments there, as well as many NCAA college cups. So they understand the importance of sports and the need for an indoor sports complex. So they agreed to bankroll the remaining part of that project, and they included a community center to help sell it to the community. So that project now will have a community center, probably 10 to 12 basketball courts, plus a 4,000 seat arena to host a number of youth, amateur, and collegiate sporting events. So we are very, very excited about this project. The arena will be wired for esports, so we're going to be able to do more esports events in that complex as well. So collectively, that project's going to run closer to about $360 million. You know, fortunately, the town of Cary is going to pick up a lot of those bills.
Okay. And you guys really are putting a stake in the ground on esports, aren't you?
Yeah, about 5.5 years ago, really realized that we had a great ecosystem here with Epic Games. We've got about 120 developers here in the market. Epic obviously being the largest, but our academic side with MC State, Wake Tech Community College, some of our smaller colleges like William Peace are all in that space now. So there are some great opportunities there. We also worked over the last 2 years, worked with the General Assembly to create an esports grant, very similar to a film grant that will give us the ability to go after esports. And if there's some qualifiers there, but we've got $5 million set aside annually from the state that we can help use to draw esports events, not only into Raleigh, but to any community in the state of North Carolina.
So now we move to the events area. So events and festivals, obviously a huge driver of destination visitation. Last year's Taylor Swift and Beyonce tours proved that beyond a shadow of a doubt. So tell us about the $200,000 signature event fund that you've created to attract big draw events.
Yeah, well, one of the priorities that came out of our destination strategic plan was drawing more major, what we call significant events or festivals that will draw major overnight visitation. And we needed some funding source to do that.
Yeah.
So our goal was to either find a new event that might be in existence, help grow maybe an existing event, or work with partners to create a new one. So we created a fund, and we kind of got lucky. Jay Cole, who is lives here in Raleigh, is a major R&B hip-hop singer and artist. He started a festival, wanted to bring a festival here to Raleigh in a new park that we just acquired about 4 years ago. And the city and we all worked with him, and it's now in its fourth year. It draws about 60,000 people a day for a two-day festival. All 50 states, 23 different countries are represented. And last year he brought in Usher and Drake as headliners, but it's really 2 days of great entertainment. So that is a sample of how we got into that business. We don't put out a grant. We don't advertise these funds, but we are very selective in making sure that it's the right festival. We use those funds to host, in conjunction with NC State and the Carolina Hurricanes, an outdoor NHL Stadium Series game last year, which was phenomenal. They played that at the football stadium adjacent to the arena. Great opportunity, good exposure for us. We've also have used those funds to host a couple major esports events. And then we are also in our second year of a tournament, very unique tournament called the Soccer Tournament. 38 men's teams, about 8 women teams, about $100,000 to enter. And it's 7 soccer, and it's $1 million win all for the men and for the women. The great thing is ESPN now is going to cover all 5 days of this tournament right here in Cary, North Carolina. So, you know, this kind of exposure, not only is there great direct economic impact, but the branding and the exposure we're getting out of some of these major festivals has just been terrific for us. So we're going to continue to work with various promoters out there throughout the country to identify similar festivals for us to chase down the road.
Yeah, that is such an opportunity. I don't know if they're doing it now. I knew they were doing it when Ray Hoyt was heading up Visit Tulsa. But one of the requirements for investing these revenues is, can you get us national TV exposure? And within that TV exposure, can we get, you know, X number of money shots of the skyline or the cool neighborhoods or whatever it may be? And I think that that's just exactly what you're looking at here is,
yep,
how do we not only have an event that generates a ton of room nights, a ton of economic impact, but also national visibility on TV.
And that's exactly how we're striking all these deals, Bill. So it's a great opportunity, particularly, I mean, honestly, the esports events is absolutely amazing to me, the number of people that watch other people play video games worldwide, but the exposure is phenomenal. And we got agreements where they're running 30 or 60 second spots every hour for 3 days. So yeah, it's a no-brainer for us. And honestly, for them, it's not a big deal. So it's a, you just need to make the ask.
Right. So is this in any way why we haven't seen you around at a lot of national conferences over the past couple of years?
It's exactly why. And I, you know, I miss y'all, but I mean, you just never knew when that phone call would come. And you know, we have to have a meeting tomorrow. I just couldn't afford to be out of town. So, but it all worked out and it's been well worth the sweat, I believe.
Well, congratulations, my friend. So cool. So it's time for the bonus round question. So your first job was working on the Kearney circuit in southeastern Iowa, running a pony ride for your uncle.
Yeah, sir.
Yeah, your first job in the CVB industry was an internship with the Waterloo, Iowa CVB, where you worked alongside past DMOU guest and CEO of Catch Des Moines, Greg Edwards, who was the DOS of a new Holiday Inn that was connected to the convention center. I can just imagine the stories, and I'm sure the statute of limitations is probably not long enough for you not to tell us some of those stories. But here's what I really want to know. Both you and Greg have headed DMOs that have had a profound impact on destination development, not just destination marketing. What was it from those Waterloo days that caused you guys to view destination marketing in a whole different way?
Wow, that's an interesting question, Bill. I would say the time that Greg and I were working in Waterloo, they had just opened up a, what they call a convention center. It wasn't very large. And the Holiday Inn was the headquarters hotel. And just in the short amount of time that we worked together, and we started to see the impact that it was making in downtown Waterloo. I mean, there wasn't much going on downtown. A lot of shady areas and not much of a reason to go downtown. What that infrastructure did for the community was phenomenal. And then what came along with that were, you know, we started doing live after five parties and more activities downtown around the convention center. And it just brought people to an area. And then, as you know, what comes along with that is better restaurants and life and bars. And that was the catalyst for downtown Waterloo that Greg and I fortunately had a small part in. And it was a great experience to and really opened my eyes on what this business was all about and the impact that this business had on a community. And quite honestly, Bill, before I did that internship, I worked for the Sports Information Office for 4 years at the University of Northern Iowa, really thought I was going into sports. But once I did that internship, it just opened my eyes on how, first of all, how fun it is, this industry, but the impact that any bureau or the hospitality industry in general can have on a community. And so I decided right then and there that was going to be my career. I had no idea that it even existed until I did the internship.
Oh, exactly. You had a ringside seat to see exactly what the impact was. I had the same thing. Many of us, I think, especially those of us that got into the business in the 80s and 90s, we didn't know what the hell destination marketing was. I came from broadcast. I got fired, as everybody in radio does at some point in their career. I needed a job, and the local DMO was hiring. And I had actually, I've told the story many times. I had actually made fun. I was the morning guy on the radio station in town. And I had made fun the year before when they established the CVB, going, oh, come on, there's no tourism here. You guys, this is a boondoggle. And I was unmerciful for days about this new thing called a convention and visitors bureau in a small suburban town outside of Chicago. And once I got the job, which was just a job, I didn't anticipate staying more than a year or two. It was just something to pay the bills, support my family. And it had to be 6-7 weeks, and I was totally hooked because I realized the impact that I could have on my community if I was successful. And that meant the world to me. And I never turned back, just like you.
Yeah. And, you know, Waterloo, like many small communities, probably around the country, their CVB at the time was part of the Chamber of Commerce. And, you know, so not only did I focus on tourism, but I also had the had the opportunity to see the impact that a chamber had as well. And honestly, the difference between a chamber and the CVB.
Yeah.
And so that kind of opened my eyes on how important it was for the two to work together. But there was definitely a different mission with both.
Yeah. Hey, I got a follow-up question to your bonus round, because in your bio, you do mention not only that internship in Waterloo, but that you were part of that amazing incubator in Houston, where I don't know if we've ever counted out the number of future CEOs that came out of that incubator from that time in the 80s and 90s when that thing was just a cauldron of talent. Tell us about your time there and what that meant to you.
Well, you know, a lot of those guys had left. So I kind of walked in with a clean slate. There was a guy by the name of Eddie Webster that took over the bureau. Mm-hmm. Eddie hired me in Palm Springs. And then about a week after he hired me, he took off and worked in Louisville for a few years. But then he went down to Houston and brought me back to Houston. So I got to tell you, Bill, I have never been in a bureau that up until that time that had been so, it was such a well-oiled machine. I mean, the respect that all the folks that had worked there before had created within the community.
Yeah.
They had just hosted the Republican convention before I got there. But, you know, Houston's a big city, but the community certainly understood the importance of the bureau, the importance of tourism, and the respect and credibility that all those folks that you talked about had created before I got there was phenomenal. And I had big shoes to fill because I couldn't let them down, right? They established some high benchmarks, and it was my role partially to make sure that we didn't lose that momentum,
right?
But obviously continue to book more and more business. But yeah, I mean, just their policies and procedures and their credibility among the community was hands down something I'd never experienced before. So I really applaud everyone that came before me into that Houston market, because they've done a phenomenal job.
Well, and clearly prepped you for what you've done in the greater Raleigh region. And again, congratulations. I don't think that there is a success story like yours over the past couple of years coming out of the plague that can even come close to matching what you've done. It's just simply sensational, and congratulations.
I appreciate it, Bill. Thank you.
You bet. That's it for this edition of DMOU. Tell your friends and peers. This is where the best and the brightest come to share their stories. It's DMOU.com. And be sure to subscribe on whatever platform you listen to DMOU to be notified when new episodes drop. Thanks again to our sponsor, our friends at Destinations International. Registration for the annual convention in July in Tampa is now open. Last year's event was a sellout, so don't dawdle. You can learn more at destinationsinternational.org, and we look forward to seeing you in Tampa in July. DMOPros.com is where you're going to find links to our services for the DMO sector, links to the Z News, position papers on board diversity, and a new model for destination development, the book Destination Leadership, and the biggest DMO job board on the planet, plus access to past episodes of DMOU. That's DMOPros.com. Executive producer of DMOU is Terry White, and this is a production of DMO Pros. I'm your host, Bill Geis. Until next time.